Welcome back to another episode of the Untalented Podcast.
Woo!
With Unknown. Today we're joined by Asad Sheikh, Head of Strategy at Grey.
Ooh.
Thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
It's so nice to have you. So we're going to start off with a little bit of an icebreaker. We do this with everyone who kind of comes on.
Oh, God.
Who are you and who do you want to be? we've got some this or that. So it would be like quick fire.
Oh, nice. Yeah, and then nice. It's just like get us warmed up.
Gets us warmed up a little bit. So do you want to start, Ellie? And then
Absolutely.
We'll kind of go like bounce.
Okay. Ready?
Yes.
So, Asad.
Yes.
Skill or fame?
Skill.
Too hot or too cold?
Too cold.
Early start or late finish?
Early start.
Straight in there.
You were like,
love it.
I'm here, ain't I?
Books or films?
Films.
Dogs or cats?
Cats.
City or countryside?
City.
Nike or Adidas?
Nike.
Sandals or Crocs?
Sandals.
Playlists or podcasts?
Playlists.
Mackies or Burger King?
Burger King.
Oh, interesting.
That's rogue. That feels rogue.
Oh, do the Burger King. 80s or 90s?
Oh, God, lived through the boat and still here.
Preach.
90s.
Yoga or CrossFit?
CrossFit.
I think I know the answer to this because you mentioned it earlier, but Taylor Swift or Britney Spears?
Taylor Swift.
Ah, I thought so. Are you a Swiftie?
A massive Tay-Tay fan.
Everyone's a Swiftie.
I love Taylor Swift. And by the way, just on the record, I have loved her ever since Love Song. So I ain't one of those reputation queens.
I'm getting
like,
tired.
Oh, yeah. Like 2008, like old school Taylor
Yeah,
Swift.
Proper old school. Yeah. I still sing to Love Song.
Oh, yeah,
Love Story,
too,
yeah. Sorry, Love Story, yeah.
I think I sang it in the shower. Like,
it's
a great song.
I feel like the Swifties are like an epidemic. Like, they're just spreading. Mm. Don't you think?
I read this conspiracy about how her relationship with the football player is this huge plan to get more women into like sport.
Wow.
But I love that about her brand. That even she just goes on, lives her life, people just telling her brand story that's not even hers. Yeah. Like, and that's proper, you know, that's an icon there.
Totally.
Like, people are making up things. I mean, if it is, that's great.
Yeah.
But I think if she wanted to do it, she'll just do it blatantly. I don't know. She would. Why would you do it? It's great to get women into sports.
Absolutely.
Why would
she?
Interestingly, it's a strategic thing to do.
It is. Insights are everywhere. Speaking of icons,
yes,
obviously, Asad, you're an icon. So I would like to ask you who the first person to make you feel talented was.
It was my father, actually.
Oh, that's nice.
Because I come from a family of doctors. So, like, literally everybody's a doctor. Parents, doctors, sister, doctor, cousins, niece and nephews. So I actually call myself the white sheep of the family because everybody's South Asian. And I even married a doctor. That's Stockholm syndrome.
Oh, wow.
So, but it was... I was always really into drawing and a lot of visual arts. And I just used to, when I was young, I just used to take a piece of paper. I'm obsessed with technology and robots. And I used to draw these robots intricately. And my father saw it and was like, wow, I think you should definitely go into this space. Which meant a lot at that point in time because I don't necessarily come from a creative background. They're not creative professionals, but they're definitely creative minded. Mm. And I think they saw something in me that they perhaps did not get to practice within their lives because of cultural expectations. Mm. And he's like, yeah, you should pursue this. You'll be good at it.
That's nice. Yeah. It's nice to have come from a family that, you know, you probably expected your life to go a certain way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you were like, I'm going against the grain, baby.
I mean, it really went lots of other ways except that way. I'm sure we'll touch upon that. As we, like, I think he perhaps shouldn't have encouraged me at that point in time. I really went rogue afterwards.
I love that.
Do you reckon you could have been a doctor?
No, because I have tremendous respect for doctors. I'm married to one as well, so obviously I can't say anything bad about it. But I have tremendous respect for it. But I think I think I do definitely have a temperament of being patient with people. Mm-hmm. It comes from just me learning that from doctors. But I've always kind of wanted to be in the proximity of creativity. Mm. So I think even if I was in, maybe I would have been a great plastic surgeon because I have really good hand-eye coordination and there is some creativity within that space. But I've always been wanted to be near the arts than the sciences. So I would have always missed that. Otherwise, I have tremendous respect for that profession.
Yeah.
Tremendous.
How did you like get into the arts? How did that happen?
By force, pretty much. As obedient South Asian son, I went to the States to do my undergrad, and I did that in computer sciences. So I'm a bona fide nerd.
Where did you go?
Michigan. So really, I don't know what a Pakistani was doing in super cold Michigan. It's so cold. But the school was great. I got in and finished my undergrad. And then like while I was there, so one thing great about the American education system is that they expose you to a lot of different things. So it's not like a single track, 3 years. You can pick and choose your electives.
Yeah, so they have like majors and minors.
They have majors and minors. So I minored in marketing while I was doing computer sciences. And so I was like, oh, this I really enjoyed marketing because it was such an interesting way of getting near people but using creativity. And I loved that. And then I was like, oh, computer sciences is great. And then I kind of parked that to the side and pursued marketing, advertising brands afterwards. And at that point in time, I didn't really know that digital marketing will become a thing. And so both these kind of skill set converged and here I am. So that was the first time I was exposed to it. And I was also on client side. But advertising has always been... If marketing is the body, advertising is the face.
Yeah.
So I was like... Oh, let's
that's very true. Yeah. That sounds right as well.
And strategy-wise, because I think it's quite interesting, a lot of people that we speak to sort of just find themselves in strategy. It's not really kind of like a linear, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's uni study strategy. People aren't, when they're 12, like, I want to be a creative strategist for an
agency.
How dreaming of their future and stuff.
Yeah. At what point were you like, okay, strategy, this is for me?
That's a really good question. Mine was very pragmatic, right? So I learned a lot of like modular thinking with computer sciences. Like, you know, like they say, it's, you know, you need to learn languages, you really need to understand intricacy, meticulousness of constructing messages that work. Then marketing was there as well. Like, you know, I'd studied marketing. And I'm like, all right, so I have this kind of like a bit of a creative mindset. But then I have a commercial agenda for it as well. So, and I felt that, oh, advertising strategy is the best place to be, that I have license to do something. And that's when I literally discovered advertising planning. And then I'm like, okay, well, let's give this a shot, and never looked back.
I love
since
that.
Loved it. Loved
organic, it just kind of happened.
Yes, absolutely. And you just got to see what you have. That's all we have to see what you have and see what you can do with it. And advertising strategy felt the best place I can be my best.
Nice. And so your career has obviously been very successful.
Has it?
Yes. Okay. You've got yourself to one of the biggest ad agencies in the world, very recognized, like top 20 ad agency at Grey, and you're heading up the strategy team. But at what point did you realize I'm actually good at this? Because I think for you to be like kind of the big dog at the top, and then there must have been a point you're like, I'm actually really good at this, I could lead this, I could do this.
I still don't feel like that.
Because I don't think anyone does.
I don't think I don't.
Imposter syndrome is
real. I mean, imposter syndrome is real, and I think I know that there's much more volume to this conversation now, and it's great because usually, you know, growing up in ad culture, it's quite a hard man culture, right? Yeah. I mean, you have to be like, you know, in control and all of that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm great at it, but I know I love doing it.
Yeah.
And if you love doing something, you love doing it with other people, and then you also love to inspire other people to do it as well. Mm-hmm. And that's all I've done. It's been a constant learning, which I've really, really loved. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of has kept me in the game. But you'd never really... I think if at one point I'm like, oh, it's great, I'm really good at this, I'll probably leave it.
Mm. Oh, really?
Yeah, I'll probably do something else. Because it's always been on my agenda. I've done a lot of different things in my life. So I think it's that variation and vibrancy is really important to me. It's never to be stale.
Mm.
That just keeps me going.
So I guess from like a success perspective, obviously you can win awards, you can become a strategy lead, but what does, kind of following on from what you just said, what does success look like for you?
I think if you change something, if you've actually managed to change something or someone, that's great. And when it comes to brands, I think good work is something that challenges the status quo. That's a very big way of saying, right, you've done something different, you've changed something. Mm. It's the same with if you manage to change people's opinion or behavior about something, that's great. That's success. I've learned that with working with Pride as well, because I've seen the work, how good work, good messaging can make people feel seen and heard.
Yeah.
It has such a positive effect on them. And that's not just for Pride. Marmite can do that. Nike can do that. Mm-hmm. You know, Arla can do that. Helly Hansen can do that. Any brand can do that. Mm-hmm. But if you can make somebody feel seen, and you're like, oh, great, and they can, you can change their behavior, that's success. Love doing that.
That's definitely what I think is interesting around, like, people understanding what strategy is and kind of where that comes in certain, you know, campaigns or brand work or whatever it is. And if you look at, like, doctors, like, you can measure success with a doctor
look
quite
at them
easily.
Every day.
You know?
Can't get away from them.
Yeah, you can't escape them. But if you look at someone who's, like, a doctor, and then someone comes and they're like, I have a pain here, or I'm not well, and then they get better, that's a success.
Mm. Yes, it
You've
is.
You fixed something there. And I think when you look at strategy or anything kind of creative to measure success, it's really hard. It's like, is success popularity? Mm. Is it, you know, I can't think of any other examples.
I think it's impact.
But like impact. Yeah.
It's impact.
And it's like you said, I think it's knowing that you've changed something or like changed perceptions or mindsets. And I think that's the whole point of strategy.
It is, because the strategy, I mean, it's like we're still kind of deciphering what strategy is. A strategy is just an innovative way of doing something with the aim to get better results.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's all it is. It's like, it's not that complex.
Mm.
So if innovative thinking is part of it, then that innovative thinking means that you're going to do something that hasn't been done before. Because otherwise, you don't need strategy, you need process. If you think you're something is doing well, you just keep on doing, you don't need strategy. You might need strategy to justify it. But true strategy means that I'm going to improve this with some innovation, and that only comes through change and making a difference. So if you have that very clear in your head and you can convince your clients to do that, great.
Mm.
That's all that's needed.
What's one piece of work or one thing which you're most proud of which resulted to change throughout your whole career?
So I'm a massive animal lover.
What's your favorite animal?
Oh God, Eddie, you know, that's, I'm, that you're going to speciesism and I'm not gonna go there. I love
it. We don't compare here on the podcast.
We don't compare here. I really, really do love all animals. I really do. And I got a chance to work with PETA, the Animal Welfare Organization, for Octocurse, which was, you know, octopuses are like, oh, it's an octopus. Like, nobody wants to, everybody wants to eat it. Nobody wants to see it. but they're very sentient. They're as sentient as a cat or a dog. So they were to do a campaign on saving any kind of wildlife was very close to my heart. I loved doing that. Mm. I think also when it comes to people, the 50th anniversary of Pride in London, which were in the campaign, I worked with WPP, and it was an world's first entirely queer-powered Pride campaign. So everybody who worked on it was queer. For the 50th anniversary of Pride in London. So I was very proud of that moment. And it was just for all of us. And people put in so much of their love and heart into it. It's like, oh, that's great. Loved
how did Pride happen? Like, how did you get into that?
Oh, God. So Pride is actually the reason I'm here in London.
Pride. Yeah. Thank you for blessing us.
Good. I experienced my... Because, like, people know I'm originally from Pakistan. I was brought up there. I was doing my MBA here in London in the mid-2000s, and the first Pride I experienced ever was in London. And up till that point, I had never experienced such a volume of love, respect, and support from not only a couple of people but the entire city. And then I decided this is going to be my city. So I moved here 15 years later, got a chance to volunteer for Pride in London. By the way, everybody, Pride in London, it's entirely volunteer run. Not a lot of people know this. So got a chance to volunteer for it, and one thing led to another, and now I head the strategy for it as well. So it was just a very small way of giving back to what it gave me, which was a better life.
Nice. And what kind of campaigns do you get involved with from a strategic perspective at Pride?
Oh, so every year, so last, there was a bit of a, I was responsible for changing the strategy for Pride a little bit from after our 50th anniversary. So the strategy of Pride is now Let Them Lead, which is all about giving a platform to the most underrepresented, under attack, and under privileged communities within the LGBTQI+ community. Last year, it was championing trans allyship with Never March Alone. So usually the campaigns are what the big theme for Pride is every year. But from last year, we want to push it for that theme has less party and more meaning to it as well. So it was last year we managed to create the biggest and most positive media moment for trans people in the history of this country, which was excellent. And for all that they've suffered, so it's the least that anybody can do.
Yeah, and that must feel like, you know, you can work on every campaign, obviously has a purpose, but to be able to do that alongside your job that might be a bit more like consumer facing and working on, like, you know, B2C brands, but working on something that is like so rooted in like positive and social impact and social change, that could be like a nice, like a little nice thing on the side that you do.
Totally.
To just remind you of, like,
yeah, compared to, you know, it's very different, isn't it? But every brand, I guess, you work with, even at Grey, you're looking at things through a cultural lens. But 100%. To be able to be so close to the impact in that community must be so cool.
It is, and you know what, that has spurred me on to bring that fervor to my clients as well. You know, that I've used, all of my clients know that I work for Pride. That allows me to open very personal, very measured, and very open conversations with them, because they understand, like, all right, you know, I work for Pride, so I understand I'm working for the benefit of a community, but for consumers, they're also a community, right? So getting close to them is also a community. So you can actually have very open conversation with clients in the guise of, like, what do you want to do for your customers? Like, this is what we're doing for my, you know, my community at Pride. Like, what do you really want to do for your customers? So that opens a really interesting, I'm not going to make it a purpose-led conversation, it's just a very honest conversation about, you can make an ad, that's great, but what do you really want to do with them and for them? So that starts opening a very honest conversation about the responsibility of a brand towards its consumers. And I'm not saying to make their life better. Making them laugh is equally good, right? Mm. Like, making them feel special is equally good. Giving them something in return is equally good. But thinking consumer first, that is that openness I can command with my clients because I've done that with my Pride work. And I think that opens up really, really lovely opportunities of doing great work.
Do you have a dream client that you would absolutely love to work with? Maybe you're already working with them, maybe you're not.
I think Pride was one. Yeah. But I think as a dream client, I'm working with, like, I've been very, very lucky. I've worked with the likes of, you know, Coca-Cola, worked for Peta, Swarovski, Helly Hansen, like, lots of really lovely brands. A brand that is all close to my heart is Lego. Lego. Massive fanboy Lego. That's the only toy I have. That's the only toy I still have.
Cats
out of the bag. Cats definitely out of the bag. But I just love, I think they're doing amazing work anyway when it comes to inclusivity and creativity. It's great. But my love for it starts when I was three or four. So it's just something to do with that. Anything to do with that brand is just going to be a full circle moment, I think.
The legacy heritage brands.
It is.
It's like, yeah. And having an emotional connection to a brand and getting to work on the position of it and kind of a campaign or whatever it is must be like a bit of a, oh my, like, pinch me moment. Maybe that is how you measure success.
Yeah.
Getting to work on the brands that you loved as a child.
So I love that. Go for the pinch me moments.
Mm. Yeah.
I think that should be the your mantra for your career. Mm. Mm. Try to get as many pinch me moments as you can. Yeah, like you should always really nice pursue word. That. Like yeah. And this, when you look back, you won't look at titles. You won't look at necessarily brands. Mm. You look at, like, this is what I did for that brand.
Yeah.
And I can't believe I did that.
It gave you that feeling.
Yeah, like, that wow. that feeling. Yeah. And that's the only feeling that keeps us in this in advertising, right? Like, you're like, oh, my God, I did that. Or I had this idea. Or I helped build this idea.
Mm.
Those chase those pinch me moments. It's gonna take you far.
Yeah.
And yeah, and also like working with, like, you know, Coca-Cola has been amazing. Like everybody kind of dreams of working in Coca-Cola, right? Like, it's like, yeah. Oh my God, it's such a big brand.
The biggest brand in the world.
The biggest brand in the world. Wonderful brand. That's been great as well. And also, like, you know, some brands that I didn't think I would work with, like Helly Hansen as well, which was wonderful and in the past. And Uniqlo was also an amazing brand to work for, just because such an amazing different way of thinking about branding, which is so Japanese. Because in the West, we think brands should do big, bold things, whereas Uniqlo has always been about Japanese iteration. Just do things, improve things little by little by little by little, and then you'll end up with excellence. And it's just wasn't, I wasn't really, I needed to kind of rewire my mind when I worked on that.
That's really interesting, because Ellie and I sometimes talk about how, like, strategy is ever evolving, and, like, you can't just apply the same strategy to every client. Mm. Like, no. Yes, there's going to be certain processes you might go through, or, you know,
similar problems, but never the same solution.
But it's everything's so nuanced, and it all comes down to people.
We are in a people business. Mm-hmm. People forget we're not in the business of ads. It's an output. Campaigns and create, it's an output, but the business is of people.
Mm.
The people are the ones. If the agency doesn't have its people, it's got nothing. Mm. Nothing. So it's so important to nurture people that way. And another thing about strategy is that it's strategy is not about being right. I think a lot of people think that, you know, following a particular framework, and we mentioned that, and that's like a trigger word for me, framework. I think they're great. I think frameworks are good. They help you, but they shouldn't govern your thinking.
Mm.
You got into this. Use it to maybe convey an argument. You should, but frameworks prove that you're right. Great. When somebody says, I'm right, the conversation actually stops. The whole idea of strategy is that you continue conversation. I feel it's much better to be interesting than to be right. Because if somebody's interesting, the conversation is going to continue. That means the conversation with the creative is going to continue. Yeah. That means the conversation with the creative and the client is going to continue. A lot of strategists just get a little bit obsessed about being right, frameworks, this, that, as long as I can defend my idea. Mm. And it's like, yeah, you'll be right. You'll be alone.
So true. We talk a lot as a business, actually, about being different rather than being better.
Yeah. Mm. I love that.
You have to be different.
I love that.
So
and it's also, I don't know if you've gone to the Coco Chanel exhibit at the V&A, and I was read a quote there, which was lovely. It said, like, in order to be irreplaceable, you have to be different.
Mm.
So if you want to do that, then stay different.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of people who might be better than you.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. But you're different and you know your difference.
That is entirely true. And I think if you look at unknown, for example, if you strip it back, we're a recruitment company, but we do it differently, so we now have different,
it's a unique
outlets.
Point of view, isn't
it's
it
a unique point yeah. of view, it's an opinion, it's a nurturing aspect, you know, what you'd expect. And I think you spoke a lot about being like the nurturing person for the team, especially at Grey, taking on that kind of like nurturing approach, encouraging it throughout every level in your team. How do you kind of put that together, and how do you approach different characters in your kind of team?
That's a really good question. Of course, you have to mold yourself a little bit to the character that is in front of you.
Mm.
But if, in my humble opinion, if there is a silver bullet, that's kindness.
Mm.
I think, like, even from animals to human beings, everybody responds to kindness. Mm-hmm. And it's also because of like the legacy of a hard man culture in our in our industry, it's kindness is sometimes seen as a weakness. But actually, and I'm stealing this from somebody who did this amazing graduation. I can't remember the name of this person. I loved what he said. He said that if you want to spot the most intelligent person in the room, that's the most kindest person in the room. Because kindness requires a lot of emotional and intellectual intelligence.
Yeah.
Because you really need to understand what the other person is trying to say. You need to understand what's behind what they're saying, and they need to respond. And if you can get that, that's a constant challenge whenever you're in front of, whether you head off, whether you're bleeding anybody. That's a constant challenge. Like, start with kindness. Always start with kindness. And I think I've used that in my agency life. I use that in my Pride life. And also, especially, one thing with Pride in London is because it's all volunteer run. If you can make volunteers work, you can make anybody work. And start with kindness.
So yeah. True. We actually had compassion. Compassion used to be one of our values. But we actually we took it out because if you're not compassionate, what are you doing? It shouldn't be a value. Yeah. Everybody should just be
compassionate. And it gets a bad rep. But it takes, I'm sorry, it takes balls to be compassionate. It's tough. Yeah. Kindness is tough, especially in the environment that we're living in right now. We see so much harshness, and we've forgotten the power of kindness.
Social media culture, like, that stuff, gotta be kind,
and gotta be kind to yourself as well. Still doing what JVN said. I don't know, somebody said like comparison is the thief of joy.
Yeah, it's
like, you know, so I love that. And just be kind to yourself. You have your own journey. Nobody's like you, and I know it's no cliche, but really, no, nobody is like. Just find your own thing. We just get too busy of comparing ourselves or asking people what to do and the way that you want it done. So.
Serves no purpose, does it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And being a strategist, we always need to serve a purpose because we need to get to a point which is a result, which is an outcome, which is a resolution.
Yeah. Just touching on social media there, what have you noticed? Because a lot of your background is like social, digital. What have you noticed is changing now when you have clients come to you? Because Grey is more of a traditional ad agency. Mm-hmm. If that even exists these days, but what are you noticing differences in terms of like the briefs that you're getting on? Is there a lot more social kind of considered there? Like, if you get a brief and you're like, we're making a TBC, but this has to look good on social media, is that something you have to consider?
Well, it depends from client to client, right? Like, you know, there are clients. Do you remember when digital was a thing?
Yeah, I know.
Like, honestly, I need somebody digital. a calculator.
Everything is digital. My brain goes to digital clock.
I need somebody digital. Okay.
I imagine someone in a room like tapping on these.
Like a Minority Report kind of vibe. Like, you know, it's like, I need that.
Those, in the metaverse. Like.
Those, yeah, that's something like that. So,
I just think of Avatar.
Yes. Unfortunately, we don't have that technology yet. But it's just to answer, like, there are social is just a channel. It is a channel. It's a very effective channel.
Yeah.
You can get to, it's also, you can get to a lot of people very quickly, but then again, social is also a very ephemeral channel. You can get to a lot of people very quickly, and then you'll be gone. So keeping that in mind, use it in a way so it lands your idea with some sort of power and impact. It has some sort of, people remember it. I always say, like, listen, don't think about social, don't think about digital, don't think about channels. Just think about the only risk you will ever take is not going on a channel or not, is being dull. Just don't be dull. There is a proper cost to pay if you're dull. There's so many clients who're like, oh, no, it's fine. This is a lovely message. This is my brand, and people will get it, but it won't get to them.
Yeah.
We are in the golden age of content, right? Like, people are consuming world-class content. They watch two episodes. I'm like, oh, it's kind of boring. But like, you're like, well, like, three massive Hollywood stars in it. If people's like, you know that, oh, Scarlett Johansson is now, I don't think she's doing a good job. Like, you know, so, but if those content pieces of content are not winning, what chance in the hell your little ad, which is actually dull, is going to have? So it's we don't have the luxury to be safe anymore.
No.
We don't. Be interesting.
Yeah.
Be provocative. Have a point of view that people will say, oh, yeah, I noticed that. It's good. It's great. That's my only thing. So, like, just don't stop thinking channels.
Yeah.
If you're interesting, the message will get to the get to your consumers. It always will.
Love that. Yeah. What can you see, speaking of kind of strategy and like the future of it, what can you see agencies doing to build like a better strategic offering? Where do you see the future of strategy going for the better?
I think, I'm just trying to keep, like, should I use these words or not?
Do it.
I always say do it.
Good, I'm going to do it. This is a message to all strategists out there. Stop being fluffers. You can be porn stars.
Yes! Slay!
Because,
that's hilarious.
Because it's really just too busy. Like, as long as, like, you know, I'm going to...
Yeah.
You are part of the creative process. Creatives want more creative-minded people around them. There is, I have not met a single creative in my life like, no, I'm just going to do my creativity on this.
Yeah.
They only do that when you are acting as a strategy, as a policeman.
Yes, yeah.
That goes back to, it's like, if you're obsessed in being right, you're constantly building walls around the creative.
Mm.
You literally are there to fluff them a little bit and just get them on their way. And like, who wants to do that, right? Like, your job is literally to be in bed with them to make the best work possible. Mm. And trust me, it's not for them. You'll feel great doing it.
Mm.
You will. Again, that requires true intelligence, kindness, not telling people what to do, understanding what they want to do, and then convincing them with logic.
Yeah.
To make a little bit of magic with them. It really is that.
It's so interesting how strategy is so much based on like emotional intelligence and understanding people, because it's like human behavior, but really analyzing them as a person and what people
like being very granular about it.
Yeah,
being very granular, and you know what it is because we are taught to defend our we are taught to, we're definitely in South London.
I was gonna say
we are South London represent, love South London. We are definitely, we have been in a space that, you know, where strategists have been encouraged, like, you know, as long as your argument is watertight, it will be good. Your argument should be open-ended. It should be the start of something that goes somewhere. But I think, just to answer your question, much better integration between strategy and creative is the only... And also not forgetting accounts as well. But better joined-up thinking is when really, really good ideas come through.
How can we do that? How can we create more of a harmonious relationship between creatives and strategists?
So I think it's all, when it comes to, for example, with Grey, you have to set a culture of, not only this is a culture of communication, I don't think that's enough.
Mm.
It should be a culture of companionship. It's like you are there from the start as a strategist to the finish.
Yeah.
Even get involved in production if you, and like, you know, I've always encouraged my strategists to just get involved. And if they need you, be there. Come up with ideas. See what you can do. Because as strategists, you're problem solvers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Your problems don't stop when you deliver the creative brief.
Yeah.
That's when
that's where the fun starts.
Yeah.
Why stop there?
I think that's their biggest frustration, is feeling like they're just involved at the beginning and then nobody wants them to be involved throughout the entire creative process. But it's key. You have to be able to create like concept, you know, together.
100%. And I am always, including myself, encouraging everybody around me, you know, start, be a proper companion to the people that you're working with, and especially with creatives. They are like, you are your yin and yang. You have to work well together to come up with an idea that is fully rounded, that has been explored to the nth degree. And then it is perfectly sellable to a client. That you can't do that. What happens is, like, when creators come with an idea and then the strategists check their homework, it's like, Nobody likes anybody who checks their homework. No. Have you ever liked anybody who's checked your homework?
No.
But
no,
don't be that person.
Yeah. No.
Do the homework with them. Be there. But it's just, but it is about not only just removing the physical distance, but any sort of mental distance there might be between strategists and creatives. Well, it can be done through process as well a little bit, but it's usually through culture.
Yeah. Have you found throughout your career that tension between strategy and creative has improved? Or do you feel like there's still...
I think there should, I would call it, I would rephrase tension as, when it's negative is tension.
Yeah.
When it's positive is chemistry.
Yeah.
Mm.
And that's it's not, like, yeah, there's a difference. There should always be friction.
Yeah.
Mm. But when the friction is negative, it can lead to like, then people start hiding what they want to do. And then that's not, but if it's chemistry, then you're probably like, you know, flirting with your creative.
Yeah.
That back and forth, that banter. Then you actually, you know, this is great. So the friction should always be there.
Yeah.
You should always be there because always something great always comes out of friction and challenge and pressure. So, but there are ways of doing about it. When it's through chemistry, that's fun.
Mm.
That's fun. And the work is fun. And like I said, like my obsession with doctors, we don't work for the NHS. We work in advertising. Oh, for God's sakes, have some fun.
Yeah.
Have some fun.
It
have
can be
some
so
levity.
Serious sometimes.
It is, especially strategy can be really, really serious. Yes, it is serious. But maybe with the life that I've led, I've just kind of, I take it very seriously, but I'm very serious about having fun.
Yeah.
I think happy people
who having some serious fun.
Have some serious fun. It's ads, for God's sakes. Like, you know, and you will talk, there will be some serious ads that you'll make, and that's absolutely fine. But, you know, people who write tragedies don't necessarily live a tragic life, do they?
Mm.
They might have lived a part of it. They might be happy. But it's what you gain from how you've lived and how do you convey it. You don't have to play a part. But levity, fun, chemistry is so important because you know what? It shows up in the work.
Yeah.
It shows up in front of the client. If clients come to agency, you know, I was talking to, I had a client in yesterday, and I think they said to me, they're like, and I loved, I'm going to use this forever. They're like, you know, it's like, it's so much fun for us to come to an agency. And I was like, why? It's like, this was a P&G client. And they're like, you know, for us, it's like coming to Disneyland. It's like it's coming. It's like coming to Disneyland of ideas, and I'm like, wow, what? A, like we work in Disneyland,
yeah.
So what? Then just and you know, then great. Keep that mindset because if that's what clients want, and they want obviously serious things as well. But who's I again? I don't know who said that. I'm saying all these lovely things I didn't say, but I still love them. Is agencies clients hire agencies who hire people they can't hire.
Right.
So, great.
Yeah.
Do that. Do that. Live that.
Because like it's a question of like obviously certain companies do everything in house and they value having things in house.
Of course.
But then like isn't part of the fun going out and being like who wants to do our advert and then everyone comes together and like pitches all these ideas and they get to go that's the best one let's go with this one we'll do a bit of social over there so that's obviously where it becomes like and pitching as a whole like. Do pictures keep you up at night?
Yes. yes. Pictures keep me up at night because pictures are, I call, they're like the boot camp of advertising. Like you learn so much, you do so much. It's a proper bonding experience with the people that you do it. And the excitement and the fervor of it definitely keeps me up at night. However, there's a healthy level of stress and performance anxiety, if I call it, with pitching, which is a very natural thing to do. But if you're doing it with the team that you enjoy doing with, it's a great. It's like putting on a show.
And have fun with it.
You have to have fun with it. If you're in the room and if you're not having fun with your people, the clients like, would not. What this is? They're more tense than we are. I don't want to be with more tense people than I'm running this process, right?
That's how you make the best work as well.
Always. always, always that ease, that candor, the chemistry is so important.
Mm.
And it's like we're so busy getting everything right, like, and especially on, I can go on and on about pitch. I've pitched so much in my life. Pitching is not about, like, you know, this is the right answer. Pitching is about, let's talk about what the right answer can be.
Mm.
And if there is good conversation, and if I can instigate good conversation in a pitch, that's the only thing that keeps me up at night.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. It's like, yeah, how can I keep them engaged?
Because
usually clients buy the pitch work. They always buy the, what you said, people.
Yeah.
They buy the people. So and like important. The answer is a big part of it. Mm. But the people have come up with that answer, right? Mm. So if they see that the people are working together and the answer is good, that's a very good place to be in a pitch.
Mm. What's the direction you would say Grey is going in now? Because I feel like they're on a bit of a...
Upwards,
yeah. Kind of like trajectory. They want to make better work with better insights, better strategy, all of this stuff. What's the direction you guys are going in?
So I think Meg, you said, and rightfully, correctly said, like, you know, Grey has been a traditional agency. Yes, it has. You know,
yeah.
Grey has produced one of the world's best, let's say, above the line work, television commercials, and all that. The trajectory, yes, absolutely, we are on the up. But you know, all agencies go through different life cycles, and I think it's good to be part of all bits of that life cycle. I'm very excited about Grey now because, apart from being on an upward trajectory, our North Star has shifted a little bit.
Mm.
Previously, it was about, like, let's make an amazing ad. Now it's about let's come up with a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
That changes everything, really. Although you think that they're similar, but it does. It changes the kind of people who work together to build an idea together.
Yeah.
It changes what the... It changes from, like, is the final outcome going to be a script or is the final outcome going to be an idea that might birth lots of different scripts as well. So that space of a Grey being an agency that births ideas becomes much more interesting. That means, like, oh God, like, I talk to people, I haven't made a television ad, would I be okay for Grey? It's like, I don't really care. We're not that agency anymore. You're creative, you have fun working with creative people, you love ideas, you love helping ideas coming up with that's great. So that, this new influx of new blood, new thinking, new fervor with the people who are already there and the new ones coming in, that's exciting.
Yeah. I love that shift in language as well. It's not best ad, it's imagination.
It is all imagination.
Yeah.
It's all imagination. It's all what fuels it. And your job, regardless your strategy is creative, anywhere is to fuel it.
Yeah.
You need to fuel it and be present and be involved. I think that's and for that, Grey is a very much more interactive and engaging agency, and that whole culture of bringing people together within departments, but also their ideologies, their way of thinking, their cultures. It's something that we think that can only make the best work.
Absolutely. Speaking of kind of like different perspectives and different thinking, I think it's important to talk about diversity, particularly in strategy. What do you think agencies can be doing more of to ensure that diversity is taken seriously?
So I think one thing, it is as much an agency's responsibility as it is an individual's responsibility. So I'll start with individual. Agencies can, you know, have policies.
Yeah.
Grey, actually, very proud that Grey, we have a diversity charter, which means that we believe in diversity and inclusivity, and we have the expectation from our clients and the work we do together to be reflected in that as well. So like I said, agencies can do a lot of these, a lot of things which are on a policy level. As an individual, if you're listening to this or hearing this or watching this, is try not to hire people who are like you. That's it.
And that's hard because naturally when you're interviewing people, you gel typically with people that come from similar backgrounds or have similar, you know, walks of life. So that's, you know, it's not necessarily the easiest
it's not
to do, but it's so important.
It's not because, but when you hire somebody that is exactly like you, and if you are hiring, that means you're already in a superior position or a slightly more senior position, you are going to get clones in. And that person is going to do the same, and that person is going to do the same. It's not going to bring any innovation into anything that you're doing. So to me, that's diversity.
Yeah.
I mean, that's inclusivity. Like, just hire somebody who's not like you.
Yeah.
And you will get something. You will learn something from them. Yeah. Why would you not do that?
You know, it simplifies everything. Rather than having all these D&I targets by 2028, we want to be X, Y, Z. Actually, just the next time you're hiring,
just be a bit more consistent.
Hire someone different.
Just hire somebody different. Give some, like, and it's not even like giving some. Give yourself a chance, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
Challenge yourself by working with somebody that you don't know much about, or you don't have an idea about what their life is.
And it will benefit you.
It will benefit you. It will benefit them.
Yeah.
They will learn. You will learn. Great. And this whole idea that I was talking about, friction chemistry, wonderful. Wonderful. And I think that really, really stands true. And we talked about that grade, this idea of collision of difference. And we still, it's one of our, you know, like, ideologies that we still follow. It's like, you just go for it. But I think just having that in mind automatically will, organically will create a more diverse and more inclusive space. When you go through quotas and policies, I think those all those things are important. I'm not saying they're not. But it starts from an individual level. Is your mind open? Is your mind strong? Are you kind enough to do that?
Yeah, it all comes back around to kindness, doesn't it?
It does, it does.
The theme of the pod today.
It is.
But yeah, I mean, I think we should end on a question we usually ask people on the podcast, which is, what is one thing you wish you could change about the industry?
One thing I could change about the industry. We can be a little narcissistic.
Interesting.
As an industry. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that necessarily, but we should just broaden our view and our horizons. Because when advertising as an industry becomes myopic, that means you're creating a space of a very particular kind of people which ignores a lot of other people. Whereas the whole idea of advertising, it has to be populist. We're not here making art movies. You know, we're not doing, we do have a commercial agenda. We do need to have wider appeal.
Yeah.
So going back to one of the things to do is, like, hire people who are not like you.
Yeah.
That is one way of being less narcissistic.
Yeah, yeah.
So, because you're like, I'm gonna, you know, I'm okay, I'm good, I'm whatever, but there are other people who are better at other things. So I think that if I can start changing that a little bit, I think that's good. It will make advertising less elitist.
Yeah.
It will make advertising more impactful. It will, and we owe it to our clients to do that. Because clients, unless it's a very specialized client, clients want broad mass appeal. That's why we always blame clients and saying, like, who's your audience? Everybody. And we like start to like, But of course, everyone want their customers to be able, but we should have an understanding. We should take everybody along the journey, not the select few. And I think that's our responsibility. And it'll end up in good work. I believe that from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah.
Amen.
What a great way to end it.
I love
it. Any final thoughts, guys? It's always nice to close it off.
That was fabulous, though.
Yeah, it's great. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
It's been a lovely time talking to you, and also just keep up the good work, both of you. Absolutely. Really, really.
And you.
Pleasure.
Yay.